Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This week's episode of Book Cheat is brought to you by Audible. Visit audible.com/bookcheat or text bookcheat to 500-500.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hello and welcome to Book Cheat, the book club podcast where I've read the book so you don't have to. My name is Dave Warnicke, and on each episode of this show, we look at one of the classics. And joining me to look at such a classic this week, it's Beck Petratus and Nick Mason.
Hello. Hello, Dave. Great to be here.
Howdy. Hello. We both waved.
Yes.
I loved that. We were both like, hello. Oh, no, wait. Got to speak. Whoopsie doops.
We are recording this over Zoom. You guys are appearing live via satellite into my laptop, and we are forgetting that we need to speak and just waving at each other. Hello.
I also think, Dave, you've chosen probably the two politest guests you possibly could have. So this might be an hour plus of us both going, oh, no, you go. You go. It's you. No, you
after
go
you.
First.
Mm. No, after you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you. After you. The only way you can do... The only way you can do this is if one person goes, like, they power through and they're like, okay, I've accidentally interrupted someone, but let's keep going. Or
that's
you
right.
Have a continuous, no, please go. Like, you're stuck in a door, you know, when you're both, like, going, no, after you, and no one can walk through the door. It's that, but with words.
I reckon I hold the world record for the most sidesteps when you're walking up to someone and you both step in the wrong direction. I reckon I hold the world record for the most, and you're through. Okay, every time. I've got a skill at being bad at that.
And now you're married, so congratulations, because that's how it works.
Legally, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're just stuck, well, otherwise it's illegal, so you've got to be married, or, if you're still
marriage
doing
is built
that,
on less.
And you're within 1.5 metres of each other, that's not allowed, Dave, so...
Not allowed anymore.
Mm.
Yeah, that's why you got to get married and then it's fine.
All right, because if you're married, you're allowed
you're married,
to.
It's fine.
Look, as someone who is a little bit socially awkward at all times, the one thing that I have been enjoying about the current lockdown is that now if anyone approaches me on the street for any reason, whether it be to be asked for a donation or asked for directions or anything, I can just don't have to say anything and I can just walk away and just be like, no, and just leave. So that's good. I'm enjoying that a lot.
I put a face mask over my mouth and then I put one over my eyes and then they can't even, it's hard to make eye contact with me too.
That's true.
I'm just wandering the streets, just bumping into things. They can't talk to me. I can't talk to anyone. I can't see. See? Mm. I'm ahead of the games.
Yes.
Things are going well for me in lockdown, guys.
Well, being in lockdown, Beck, I mean, it's one of the things where you probably have more time to read than ever, but at the same time, most people probably aren't. But
yes.
I always ask my guests, have you been reading anything during your time in lockdown, Beck?
I have been reading the Department of Health and Human Services website.
Oh, fantastic.
Just updating
staying
myself
abreast
on new restrictions. I've been reading Twitter a lot because that's where you get the numbers and it's where the anxiety comes from.
Yeah.
But other than that, I feel like I've really dropped off the reading thing. I know a lot of people who are like, oh, I'm reading this book. It's great. Mostly I've been reading the text that comes with playing the new Paper Mario on Switch, which is a lot of words, I've got to say, because it's an RPG, but it's not a book. But it is paper. I don't know. Look, does it count, Dave? You are the guy who runs the podcast. Does a game count?
They call me the book chook.
Pluck a book, they call you. Because you're always plucking a book off the shelf.
Oh, I am.
Hey, it's Dave Warner K. That's pretty good.
Can I have that?
Yeah. I kind of feel like I wish I said, hey, it's Warner K. But yeah, please
I'll
use
also
that.
Patent that.
Mm.
Yep.
I think an instructional booklet, I can count that. Absolutely. Any reading is good reading. It's good for the soul. Mm. And how are you going with the game? Is it one of the games where you have to understand a lot of things before you can make it, you know, you can really get into it?
Oh, no. It's a child's game, essentially, which is what we all need right now. But it has, like, it's a Super Mario game, but it's, like, a story. It leads you around to different little worlds and things have happened. Everyone's paper and origami, and it's quite fun. It's just cute. It's cute and calm, and it's what we need right now, okay? I can't play The Last of Us 2, which is a very stressful game about zombies. That's too much right now, and it's too real. They're all like, there was a horrible disease, and now we're all killing each other. I'm like, that's... I don't want to think about that right now.
I have not played The Last of Us 2, but the other half of my podcast loaned me The Last of Us Part 1. So I've been playing a little bit of that, and it's just a great look at how Earth is going to be in like 2 or 3 years. So that's it's really good.
And just the trees look great, don't they?
Yeah,
we are the virus, etc.
Yes,
what
precisely.
Great trees.
Yes,
but everything else seems a bit dire.
Books are going to get us through.
That's right. Well, Mason, have you been reading any books?
Yeah. Well, I have, but like Beck, I've been reading Twitter both. As soon as I get up and before I go to bed, so that's great. That's a great it's a great idea for me.
I also do that, but I would not recommend it to anyone.
Oh no, never do it. No, if what I should do is install Twitter like at maybe midday at the earliest, and then delete it at like 9 p.m. and then just not use it at all. But I can't.
I can maybe delete it at 1 p.m.
Yeah, maybe, yes. Yeah, yeah, get in 1 hour of Twitter time. But yeah, I've also been
1 hour.
I've been reading this book, but it's called I don't know if you can get that. It's called Infinite Detail, and it's sort of a post-apocalyptic esque novel in which, among other things, the internet has been permanently erased. So it's a really interesting read, but it's also, you know, it's very anxiety inducing. For that very reason, because everything I do is attached.
Action-y, or is it like psychological?
It's more of the second one, but I haven't. I'm not that far into it because, again, like Dave was saying, we should all be reading right now. We have the time to read, but you know, Dave, if you had a podcast that was about sitting on your couch and eating ice cream, I'd be a guest every week. So yeah.
Well, do you want to start that? That sounds fun, and also we just won't bother recording it.
Okay, good.
We'll just sit on our respective couches and Zoom whilst eating ice cream.
Do we have to Zoom?
Quickly.
Can we just eat by ourselves?
Yeah, all right. Do you want to do that tomorrow?
Do I have to put these lights on? Can I just be in the dark by myself eating ice cream on a couch?
But I also think we shouldn't set a specific time. Let's just say any time, tomorrow or not tomorrow.
Yeah.
Maybe on a couch, maybe in your bed, maybe you've never got out of bed. Maybe you've dragged a freezer, like a mini fridge, into your room so you can just reach right in.
But we can write it off on tax because it's a work expense. Because it's for this podcast we've mentioned.
It's for a podcast. That's right. Yeah. This is all research.
Mm. Yeah.
I've got to eat every single flavor before I find out what one I'm going to do on the pilot.
That's right.
Well, it's great to have you both back on the podcast. Appreciate you being here. And I've also been reading, can you believe?
Oh, we can believe it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what I've been reading is a little old book that you may have heard of, maybe, and that is To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, yes.
An often requested classic that I cover on this show. Do you guys have much of a relationship with this text?
No, which is that shameful? I think everybody knows To Kill a Mockingbird, but how many people have read it? Probably everyone besides me. So that's cool, yeah.
That's okay. I'm with you right there. I also have not read it. But also I used to call it How to Kill a Mockingbird, which is not an instructional manual, I don't think. Like, I don't think there's detailed instructions on just, like, really just smacking a mockingbird with a hammer. Like,
how to get away with killing a mockingbird, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
What I'm mixing up with.
Is this Harper Lee? Is that the woman who wrote it?
That is right.
And she never wrote anything again. Is that also true?
Because I heard that from a meme.
All I know is that she wrote this book, then she wrote nothing for a really long time, and then like a couple of years ago they were like, she's put a new book out. But then it turns out it might just be a different draft of this book that's been sort of hastily re-edited. Into another book.
Very true. Yeah. I've got a little paragraph on the incident here.
Yep.
So I also had not read this book before. So this is one of the most commonly studied books in many schools, many English-speaking schools. But I obviously, the same as you guys, somehow avoided it during my time in high school. So I'll tell you a little bit about it. First published in 1960, To Kill a Mockingbird is a novel by American author Harper Lee, as he just said. The book was an immediate success and it won a Pulitzer Prize in 1961. Since then, it has been translated into over 40 languages and sold over 30 million copies worldwide, which is quite impressive.
That's not bad.
That is a lot. Yeah.
You'd be happy with that, you think?
Despite the incredible success of her debut novel, this is for you, May, so Lee didn't publish a follow-up novel for over 50 years until in 2015, at the age of 88, an old manuscript called Go Set a Watchman was discovered in a safety deposit box and then published.
Sus.
So some believe the novel is actually an early draft of To Kill a Mockingbird, and there was a lot of controversy around
it. Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
It was published as if it was a sequel.
Yeah.
But it really was basically an early draft. Despite that, the novel sold 1.1 million copies in the first week.
Yeah, okay, not surprising, yeah. Yeah, wow.
Mostly but, the schools again, they were like, let's get it in there, we got another thing to study, yes!
Lee died the following year in 2016 at the age of 89. So a lot of people were a bit outraged because I did see it as people cashing in before she passed away.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think that's also what I heard. Yeah, but I also hear that they're bringing out another sequel. One Tequila, Two Tequila, Three Tequila Mockingbird. So.
Is that where you?
Thank you, everyone.
I like that. That's very good.
Well, that's my one joke for the week. See you later, everyone. I'm gonna go.
Cheerio.
Yep.
Thank you so much. I always start with the opening line of the novel, just to set the scene, to give you a bit of the author's words, if you will. Oh, this is the opening line. When he was nearly 13, my brother Jem got his arm badly broken at the elbow. Opening line.
Wow. Intriguing.
That happened to my brother, I think, too.
Really?
Yeah, I did it to him, though. So I don't know if this is a good story.
What did you do?
It is a good story. I think I've told it. I might have told it. I hope I haven't told it on Bookcheap. But me and my brother were at the maternity ward visiting my new cousin. I said to him, I was like, I've learnt new blocks at karate. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you should come at me and I will show you how to effectively block against an attack. You know, a normal thing you do in a maternity ward.
For sure.
He's coming at me. He's coming at me. And I'm like, pow, and I knocked him backwards into a door, and he hit his arm and went down, and then he was like, ah, and he obviously, ow. Mm. And instead of taking him to the hospital that we were in, we left, and we went out to dinner. The next day, we went to a skateboard competition, and then after that, we finally went back. I don't know why my parents did this, but then we finally went back to the doctors and he had broken his arm quite badly. So I count that as a win for karate. So don't come at me.
Beck, look, you're saying a lot of words, but it sounds to me just like a lot of bragging. Oh, I went to a hospital. Oh, I went to a skateboard competition. I go outside all the time. La-di-da. I've been to more outdoor events. Me. Yeah, wow, okay.
I went within 1.5 metres of my brother and I decimated him.
Nice.
And that's the dream.
Yeah, that's true. And you also have a certain amount of plausible deniability there because the door broke his arm. So you could be
I wasn't involved. It wasn't me.
He should have learned how to drop and roll or whatever you do in karate, you know?
Yeah, he was missing the other half of also him learning karate probably to make that safe.
Yeah,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway, good opening line. I liked it a lot.
I like it too. I relate to it.
It's intriguing. I don't relate at all, but it's very intriguing. First of all, why didn't she say 12? You know, because that's the age he actually is. Not nearly 13, you know. 12 and three quarters, she could have said.
Is it because you're on the cusp of teenagerhood?
You know, it sounds to me like she just wanted to, bring up the word count, if you ask me. She's starting early. Yeah, she's like, I'm going to add a couple more words. Yeah. She called, she called the publisher and she's like, can I increase the font size by like half a point? And they're like, no. And she's like, well, I'm just going to say nearly of the age of 13 instead of 12.
And when they made her cut the How to Kill a Mockingbird, like the how out of that, she was devastated because she was like, that was another word.
That's right.
What have you done? I'll add it here. Nearly.
Yep.
Done.
Done. Perfect. Now, who are we talking about, Dave? Who is this talking, and who is the brother? What's going on?
Well, it goes on. So when he was nearly 13, my brother Jem got his arm badly broken at the elbow. And it goes on, skipping a couple of lines, the ending of this paragraph is, when enough years had gone by to enable us to look back on them, we sometimes discussed the events leading up to this incident. And thus begins Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. So, Beck, have you ever thought about using your karate story and publishing a worldwide bestseller that leads up to that event?
Every day I think about publishing a worldwide bestseller. I'm like, maybe today's the day.
Yeah, well, if not now, when, you know? When else are you going to? You know what they say? If you haven't published a worldwide bestseller in quarantine, you should be bloody whatever going to do it. Am I right?
That's what they bloody say. What happened just then?
Well, based on answer to your question, this story is told to us by our narrator, a certain Jean-Louise Finch, who was known by the nickname Scout.
Yeah, okay. That's a name I recognise. I have no other context for that.
She tells us about her brother Jem and his injured arm and starts telling us the events that led up to it being broken. So that's what this story is. And it's like a bit of a flashback. It's set in Alabama in the 1930s. Scout tells us that her relatives first moved to the USA from England and set up a farm on the Alabama River. The farm was called Finch's Landing, and generations grew up there. But Scout's father, Atticus, another main character in this book, was the first to move away. Rather than become a farmer like everyone else, he became a lawyer, then moved to the nearby town of Maycomb, where this story is set. Maycomb, Alabama, in the 1930s.
Okay. All right. We've got a few names so far, some places. I like it. Set a scene. I'm building a little mind map of all the various characters. Yeah,
putting it together.
I mean, I'll forget it almost immediately, but you know, the effort was there. So,
Atticus made a good living for himself despite the Great Depression happening around this time, and had two children with his wife, first Jem and then Scout, who is 4 years younger than Jem. Their mother died when Scout was just 2 years old, leaving Atticus to care for the children along with the family cook, an older black woman called Calpurnia. Hmm. And they're the main sort of characters in the book. So you've got Jem and Scout, their father, Atticus, and the cook, Calpurnia.
Good.
So in 1933, when Scout was nearly six and her brother Jem was nearly 10, again, nearly. They love the use of nearly. That's three extra words we've got in there.
That's right. Yeah, she'd be bloody cursing herself if she got to the end and there's a big red squiggle and a whole bunch of words underneath that. And she's like, oh, I've gone over the word count now. This is embarrassing. I'm gonna have to cut some stuff out.
Have to go back.
Control F. Nearly done.
Gone.
Well, when the Scout was nearly six and Jem was nearly 10, a boy moved in next door. His name was Charles Baker Harris, but he called himself Dill. Another main character here, okay. Dill.
Right.
Where did Dill come from? Charles Baker Harris. Like a pickle? Or
like
a
maybe
dill?
Like your
mum calls him a dill? Like, oh,
maybe
like
he's a dill.
He's down at the shops being a dill.
He's a silly little boy.
Maybe dill, you know, you put some dill in a bagel, you know, like a nice... That's Dill Bagel. Like maybe that's because his name's Baker, so maybe that's why. Let's assume that's why.
Yeah, that makes sense. No, I like that.
He was always eating bagels.
Yes, exactly. That's right.
But bagel was too obvious.
Yes.
So Dill, he stays the summer with his aunt, Rachel Haverford, who is the Finch's neighbour. Mm-hmm. And the kids all get along and have a great time hanging out and acting out stories. Just having a good time. Mm. You know, kids being kids.
Yeah.
But Dill isn't the most interesting neighbour on the street. Oh, no. That title definitely belongs to the mysterious Boo Radley. Whose first name is really Arthur Radley, but he's known as Boo.
Is anyone named what they're named? Yeah, what's going on? We got Scout, Dill, Boo. What's happening?
It's because he's always eating bagels, but Dill was already taken.
Yes.
And he was like, hey, can I be Dill? And they're like, nah, it's taken. And he's like, oh, boo. And then it caught on. Yeah, then we got him. Yeah, I feel like that. This is maybe one of those tropes that people that aren't in books anymore. Where like back in the day, people were always like, "Yeah, I'm my name's Charlie Baker," but people call me Dill or whatever. That now, because nobody does that anymore. It's like it's now a mystery for us. Like, why do they all have what are they all hiding from or whatever? But it's not. It's just like, yeah, that's what people were like then. Just loved a nickname.
Yeah, did you guys ever try to give yourself a nickname? Because I knew I had some friends who tried to do it to themselves. I'm like, it doesn't work like that. And then you get people who have bad nicknames.
Oh yeah, sure.
Like that's fine, but like not the cool ones because they're kind of cool.
I definitely gave myself a bad nickname that didn't catch on.
Go on.
I tried to rebrand as a. Cobra.
Oh, that's great.
That's did not catch stuff. On. Yep. Uh-huh.
Guess call me Cobra. Now is the time for it to catch on. Lockdown. Change your Zoom name to Cobra. Just start.
Can I ask Dave? Maybe it's in the delivery. Were you like, you know, were you just like, hey, everyone, call me Cobra now, or were you like, or did you do something snake like? And then you were cool. You did some sort of cool skateboard trick, like a snake. And then you were like, yeah, that's why they call me the Cobra, because maybe that would have worked. But if you were like, hey, everyone, call me Cobra, I don't think that would have, you know, that it's on the way you do it, you know?
Was it because you were biting people on the playground and you're like, well, that's me. I'm the Cobra.
Yeah, I bit a teacher on the face and I said, we should call me Cobra.
Nice.
Beautiful.
Nice.
Love it.
It didn't work.
Oh.
No, I think I just semi, like, I was trying to be semi-funny. I was like, wouldn't it be funny if he called me Cobra? But then I sort of hoped that it would catch on.
Yeah, I understand, yeah.
It did not work, but still, I still feel there is time for a rebrand.
No, I think it's Cobra time.
Mm,
I think the time is now. I tried to give myself the tiniest of nicknames, which was that people used to call me Becky in primary school, and I was like, call me Bicky, like a biscuit. And
yeah,
that's
nice.
Not good. But also, it is very bad. So it's kind of fine. Like, if they'd start calling me Bicky, I would have been like, yeah, I deserve that.
Wow.
I deserve what I've done to myself.
But I should have tried that. I should have been like, guys, call me Miso, like the soup.
Ooh,
you know?
That's nice.
But look, I think what everybody should get a pass. I think if you know, in these current strange times we're in, if you had a birthday in isolation, you should get it to do it again. And if you want to emerge from this with a nickname you've given yourself, you should be able to have it, I think. We've all suffered enough. I think, Dave, if you want to be the Cobra, you should
please.
Be the Cobra. Yeah.
I'm going to text you from now on and you will be the Cobra.
Hey, Cobra.
You know this, don't you? Like, this is now. This is forever. I'm so sorry.
I love it. I've been wanting it for nearly 20 years now.
It's happened.
So it's Cobra, Bicky, and Miso.
Yes. Brackets like the soup. You have to do the whole thing.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep.
Like the soup. Mm. Well.
All right. We've got some kids. They're playing about. They're having a grand old time.
So we've got Dill, Jem, Scout, but then they're like, they're not the most interesting person on the street. That's Boo Radley. Called Boo because Boo's a recluse that no one had seen in years and is shrouded in mystery. So Dill's moved to town and Scout's got to indoctrinate him on the local legend of Dill. So she explains to him some of the rumours she'd heard. When Boo Radley was a child, he'd fallen in with the wrong crowd and having brought up on some charges after going on a bit of a joyride with his good friends, his no good friends, I should say, rather than be sent to the industrial school as a punishment like the others to set him straight, Radley's father persuaded the judge to let him punish Boo himself. I'll sort him out. After that, Boo wasn't seen for 15 years.
Oh, probably had to write a lot of lines on a blackboard. 15 years worth.
15 years worth.
It's a lot of chalk.
I will not go on a joyride with my friends.
15,000 times.
That's right.
He wasn't allowed to leave the house until 15 years later when he apparently stabbed his father in the leg with some scissors. This is what we know about him. The father was told, oh, you should send him to a mental asylum. He sounds like he needs some help. But the father refused. And when the dad died, Boo's brother Nathan moved in, but Boo himself remained a recluse and still no one has seen him. Now it's just the basis for many legends told by local kids.
Okay, so have people seen Nathan? Is Nathan in the house? Does he come out of the house?
Yeah, Nathan comes and goes, interacts with people, does the shopping.
Yes. But does he buy meals for one or meals for two? You know what I mean? Is he buying a man-sized meal, you know? Good questions.
Yeah,
or a woman-sized.
Woman-sized meal. That's right. Yes, exactly right.
I love those man-sized meals because generally when you open them too, you're like, this is disappointingly small.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like, is that a commentary on men? I'm not sure. Maybe right? It is. Then I'm kind of cool with it if you're like, this is man-sized and it's like tiny and you're like, ah.
And you open it up and you open it up and like the plastic wrapping and is like, this is big, right? It's printed on there. It's like, this is pretty good, right?
It's pretty big. I think it's pretty big, guys. Come on, guys, please. Just give me this one. Give me this one.
Beck, what it sounds like is it sounds like you need a really big man-sized meal.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That's what I need.
But
or a really big woman-sized meal. I don't know what I'm trying to prove now. I just need a lot of food right now at this current point in time. But it's okay. I have very big bags of Doritos. Party is much better than man-size.
I think so too.
Party-sized bag of Doritos.
Yeah.
Which is great. You can't have a party with people, but you can have your own Dorito party at home on the couch. Highly recommended. What were we talking about? The book.
Yes. We're talking about the book. Boo Radley.
Yes.
So over the years, as you can imagine, in a small town with the kids, the rumours about this mysterious guy have gone absolutely haywire. Jem describes to his new friend Dill, he describes the man, the myth, the legend that's Boo. He says, Boo was about 6.5 feet tall, judging from his tracks. He dined on raw squirrels and any cats he could catch. That's why his hands were bloodstained. There was a long, jagged scar that ran across his face. What teeth he had were yellow and rotten. His eyes popped, and he drooled most of the time. End quote. So that's what people now imagine is this mysterious figure lives in the house next door.
Yeah.
And, of course, based on this, the trio, especially Dill, become obsessed with seeing this new, seeing their reclusive neighbour.
Yeah.
Culminating in Dill daring Jem to run into the yard and touch Boo's house. You know, classic kid stuff.
A knick-knocky sort of prank. But yeah. Just like with a single finger, like just a tap a head. You should at least have to knick-knock.
Leave the bag of dog poo on the, you know, on the doorstep. Mm. Set it on fire. Then we'll see see what Boo Radley's going to do. Yeah.
Leave the party bag size of Doritos and see if you can make a friend.
That's
Don't
right,
you
yes.
dare take my party bag size of Doritos. You leave them behind. They're mine. It's all I have. Leave him behind. Get away. Continue, Dave.
So Dill is dares Jem to touch Boo's house. He does so. Nothing really happens, of course, when he just touches it and runs away, absolutely scared out of his wits.
Mm.
But the 6-year-old scout swore she saw movement, like maybe someone was watching them from within the house.
Oh. Spooky. Spooky.
But also, it's someone's house. That kind of makes sense if someone's watching them from inside the house.
But someone going, hey, what are you doing? This is my house.
Hey, someone's at my house. Why are they at my house? Get out of my house.
Don't touch my house. I just painted that very specific spot. Please don't. Yeah. Please don't touch it.
So they hang out every day, playing these games, speculating about Boo Radley. At the conclusion of summer, Dill has to return home and Scout starts school for the first time. Initially, she's very excited about it, but quickly finds that she butts heads with her teacher, Miss Caroline Fisher. Miss Caroline is surprised to learn that Scout can already read and wrongly assumes that Atticus has been teaching her and essentially punishes her for being educated. She tells her, stop learning by yourself.
Wow.
Don't learn on your own time. Learn on company time or not
That's
at all.
That's right, yes.
Is that because, like, the teacher, I guess, would have less work to do and less money? Is that what the... That's such an interesting...
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be easier? Like, if I was a teacher, I would be like, sick. I don't have to worry about you.
Great.
You can just come sit here. It's fine.
I can worry about the 29 other kids. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
No, I think she's more like, he'll probably teach you wrong. Just stick with me. I'm the professional, mate. That's their kind of deal.
We've lost you a bit, Warnicky.
We have lost Warnicky, yeah.
But... The important thing is that me and you, Mesa, can continue.
We're having
to have
a great
a
time together. I think that's important. Yeah, I wonder if yeah. Dave. I wonder if Dave is aware that he's gone or.
I don't know. I mean, he still is. Oh, he's back again.
He's back.
Hello.
I'm so sorry. You both paused like it froze on my screen for a long time. But then I could see the movement. It was saying that one of you was talking and then the other, but I couldn't hear.
Oh,
anything.
We had a great conversation, Dave. This was this probably the most in-depth. Like, I think the we as guests and the listeners probably got more out of that brief exchange than any other episode of your podcast or indeed any podcast. I think they would have been like, wow. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if the numbers of your podcast drop after this, just because so many listeners achieved true enlightenment and didn't need anything anymore. Yeah. So
they were like, that was a real moment between two people.
Yeah.
You know, going, hello, how are you?
I'm glad I could almost be a part of it, almost.
Yeah, that's no. Well, I mean, if your equipment hadn't crapped out, then you, you know, it wouldn't have happened. So thank you, Dave.
All right. Thank you. The same moment couldn't have happened with me there. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Continue. Sorry.
There's this absolute goose of a teacher who's somehow like, no, I want more work. I don't want to sit on the toilet on Facebook. I want to teach these. I want these kids to come in dumb. So I have to teach them how to read and such.
Well, I mean, to be honest, this teacher is facing a lot of problems with the rest of the class, as we'll find out here, because this is the first of a few times that young Scout and Miss Caroline will clash, as the teacher doesn't like Scout learning on her own. She also doesn't like Scout explaining the ways of the town to her. The lady's new to the town, doesn't know about stuff. For example, when one of the Scout's classmates called Walter Cunningham has no lunch to eat, the teacher offers to lend him a quarter to buy a lunch and then says, you can pay me back tomorrow.
Yeah.
The boy refuses, which perplexes the teacher. Scout knows that it's because Walter comes from the Cunningham family that have no money and that he could never afford to pay back this small loan. So he's like, I don't want your money.
Mm.
Scout knows this because her father does legal work for the family in exchange for vegetables, because that's all they've got.
Uh-huh.
And Scout, seeing Walter Cunningham and Miss Caroline having this weird interaction, she thinks she'll help the situation by explaining this to her teacher, who again gets annoyed at this little upstart and then punishes her with the ruler, gives her a bit of a slap on the hand.
I remember teachers like this, especially because I was a little nerd, and sometimes teachers would be, I would know that the other students were being shitheads or doing something in particular, like hiding their whiteboard markers places, and I would know where the whiteboard markers are. And if I thought the teacher was okay, or if I was like, God, I just want to get this class over with, sometimes I would tell them and they would then get annoyed at you as if you were part of the thing, and it's like, no, I'm trying to just accept that I'm a snitch
now. Please. Beck, that's an interesting story, but what it tells me is that you were hiding whiteboard markers and then your guilty conscience got the better of you, and this is an elaborate ploy, I think, to kind of shift blame and so forth. You nearly got away with it, this decades-long con.
I almost got away with
you
it.
You nearly got
it's
away
such
with it,
a
didn't
shame.
You? Yeah.
And that sounds like classic Bicky behaviour to
that's
me.
That's exactly right.
That's Bicky.
Classic Bicky. She hides the whiteboard markers, is in book club,
then
chess club.
And then she tries to rat on Cobra. Come on, leave Cobra alone.
Well, it's bloody miso put me up to it.
Yeah, that's right. Like the soup. Mm. Like the soup would, you
like
know?
Like the soup. I'm so sorry. Yes, yeah. Miso, like the soup.
Cobra's got a lot to deal with already. He's got a lot of bullies to on his back. He's tried to tell people to call him Cobra, for God's sake. Give the kid a break.
Anyway, what a douchebag teacher. No, bad.
Mm. And there's another incident early on. Miss Caroline shows she's really out of her depth when she suddenly screams in the class one day, "It's alive!" And then points to one of the students, Burris Yule, which is a fantastic name. What she's referring to when she yells "It's alive" is the cootie or the bug that's just crawled out of his hair.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because Burris is part of the very poor Yule family, who are very famous in the town, been there a long time. Bug farmers. Yeah, that's right.
It's all they have. Scout, they don't even have vegetables. They just have bugs.
They just got bugs. I got heaps of them. Scout describes him as, quote, the filthiest human I had ever seen.
Oh, no. I'm imagining Pigpen from the Peanuts cartoons. Just a cloud of dust around him at all times.
It is that kind of thing. So she actually describes he has a grey neck because it's so filthy.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
You don't want a grey neck.
No.
And when the teacher, she freaks out, she sees this bug in his hair. She's like, oh, my God, what the hell? It's alive. And when the teacher tells Burris to have a bath before he comes back, he reveals he won't be coming back.
Oh.
Because it's revealed that the Yules, the whole family, only come on the first day of school every year, basically to get ticked off so they don't get in trouble with truant officers, and then they're never seen again. They don't go to school, despite the law saying that they should.
Mm-hmm.
They just hang out and live on their farm. And as Burris leaves, to make the teacher feel awful about herself, he calls her a slut and makes her cry. And then he, like, leaves with his bug in his hair. And she very much shows that she's very much out of her depth in this town.
Yeah. That, I mean, look, that doesn't sound like the best situation, so I'm kind of all right.
Mm.
She is a butthead, but also that's not super... Okay, all right. Maybe no one's having a good time in
this. There's no winners here, is there? No.
No, there's no winners, really. No.
Mm. Well, what about the cootie? He gets to live in a kid's hair.
That's true. Okay. Yeah, no, that's a winner. True.
Yeah, that's true. Mm, yeah.
Did they have good lice treatments back in the day? Probably not.
No, probably just just shave your head, I guess. You know, just...
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of a look now, so...
That's true.
That would be cool. Yeah.
Very true. So, and this is all on the first day of school, all this incident. So it's not been a good first day of school.
Oh, this
school.
Is just the first day.
Yeah, all on the first day.
Oh, nah, okay. She's, yep, all right.
So little Scout goes home and tells her father, Atticus, that she hates school and that she is not going to be going back. He explains to her that she has to and adds an important quote from the book, if I could read one to you now.
Please.
He says, quote, "If you learn a simple trick, Scout, you'll get along better with all kinds of folks. You never really understand a person until you climb into his skin and walk around in it." Mm. End quote.
Well, just this one simple trick to drop belly fat. It's all over the internet. I just wanted to let you know something that my father taught me is that there are hot singles in your area. And
click here now.
Click here now.
So, I was always scared by those ads because I was like, how are they in my area? How do they know? Mm. Get out of my area! So that's where I was at.
But anyway, this is much less creepy. Just get inside somebody's skin and just wiggle around in it for a bit and you'll get it.
Walk around in it and that's how you get it. But that
it'd
is
be
a,
tough
it,
to put all the toes on if you were in someone's skin.
Oh,
like,
my God.
You know how it's tough to get like a toe sock on and that's made of sock? If that's that true. Was made of skin, impossible. I don't think this is good advice.
Well, Scout, despite that, takes the advice on board and sort of thinks about it throughout the book. And then Atticus cuts a deal with Scout saying he'll keep reading to her as long as they keep it a secret from Miss Caroline. So Miss Caroline said, your father shouldn't be reading to you. Basically, no learning at home. But he's like, all right, I'll secretly keep reading to you as long as you keep going to school and don't tell the teacher about it. And they're like, okay.
This is the weirdest secret. This is one of the weirdest secrets that anyone would ever have to keep, I feel. It's like, don't tell your teacher how smart you are. Just, we're gonna build an elaborate charade around what your teacher does and does not know about your learning. Okay, so just...
For God's sake, do not tell her that you know algebra. She will kill you.
Do not tell her you know what happens in Harry Potter. When you get to go read Harry Potter in class, you pretend you go, oh my God, Snape... Good. Okay. You gotta act natural. Act like you pretend you haven't read Harry Potter before. Come on, Scout, you can do it.
Be cool. Be cool.
It's gonna be a very weird parent-teacher interview at the end of the semester. Just what's she been learning? Oh, reading. Not in my house.
No. yeah, that's right. We don't know how to read in my house. Yes, I'm a lawyer, but I do not know how to read.
That's right. Well,
so Scout continues on hating school. But then an exciting thing starts to happen. One day on the way home from school, as she's passing the mysterious Boo Radley residence, she sees some tinfoil sticking out of a knothole in one of the Radley's oak trees. The tree is along the fence line, so Scout reaches into the knothole and discovers that it's two brand new pieces of chewing gum. Jackpot.
Oh, hello. Couple of bits of Bazooka Joe, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Bit of hubba bubba.
That's right.
And not being a fool, she chews them both herself.
Mm.
But when she tells her brother Jem about it, he tells her to spit it out.
Yep. I'd say he's the wiser of the two, yeah.
Yeah, to be honest.
Mystery, was that a gum mystery. Tree? It was a gum tree. Oh. Guys, it was a gum tree. Oh. Hello, you everyone. It was a gum tree.
Good, very good.
Thank you. Goodbye.
It doesn't get better than that. It will not. It will not.
Like the trees we have in Australia.
Yeah, like the trees we have in Australia.
Eucalyptus tree. Yes.
Yeah, and you can chew them.
You're very good.
You can chew anything if you try hard enough.
Mm. Wow. Well, yeah. Is
this some sort of trap then?
Yeah.
Well, trap gum.
He says, the older brother says, spit it out. What are you doing? This is just random gum. You can't just eat gum you found. Mm. But this doesn't stop Scout from checking the tree on her walk home every single day.
In case there's more gum.
Just in case. It is a gum tree, as Beck has established.
Yeah. Mm. Or some M&Ms, for example. Ooh. Might be some M&Ms in the tree. You know?
Or money. Money tree.
Money tree, yep.
Money tree.
Mm. Which it turns out to be, because on the last day of school, Scout and Jem discover two coins inside the knot, and they decide to hang on to them.
Oh.
So we're not sure what's going on there just yet.
Mm.
But with the end of school comes summer, and with summer comes their friend Dill, who again stays with the auntie next door.
Mm-hmm.
The group again start hanging out and start to play a game called Boo Radley, where over the days they basically create a play about Boo Radley, the mysterious neighbour. Eventually, Atticus, the sibling's father, catches them, and when he sees them playing with scissors, he guesses that they're doing something to do with Boo Radley, which they deny, but they wonder if it's safe to play the game anymore, so they sort of stop doing that for a while.
Okay.
Which leads Jem and Dill to begin to start leaving Scout out of their games and playing together in the treehouse without her.
Oh.
Which is a little bit tragic.
Mm.
And feeling left out, she spends time with one of their neighbours, Miss Maudy, who gives her intel on Boo Radley, saying that he was a nice boy before he disappeared. Jem and Dill's obsession with Boo grows, and they try to pass a note to his window using a fishing pole. Basically, they're desperate to make contact with this mysterious figure. But Atticus again catches them and tells them, for God's sake, leave Boo alone.
Mm.
And they do leave him alone. That is until Dill's final night in town before having to head home again.
They're like, let's fire a gun through his window. It's just machine gun it. Machine gun his house.
Just hello, for are laugh. You in there? Perfect.
Well, the two boys cannot leave him alone any longer, and Scout, desperately wanting to be included, is convinced to help with their plan.
Hmm.
Their plan, not quite shooting, but their plan is to sneak into the yard and peer into the house through a loose window shutter.
Ah, yes.
They are geniuses.
The old peekaboo, I like it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They sneak in and look into a few windows before seeing the shadow of a man with a hat, and at this point they run away terrified, and you're like, oh, it's not that scary. Again, there's people inside a house. But then a shotgun goes off behind them. So they're being shot at, not the other way around.
Wow. I could not. That's the opposite of what they wanted to happen. That's the exact reverse.
Well, the kids run, but in their panic to get back over the fence, Jem gets caught and has to ditch his pants to escape.
Oh, what is this, a bloody... Bloody episode of Arrested Development or something? What are these guys losing his pants?
Gooses.
Oh, my God.
But also, that sounds like an excuse. It's like, oh, no, I have to get rid of my pants.
My pants are chafing me. Oh, no.
Oh, no, get them off.
Too much drag.
Mm, yep.
Need to loosen the load faster. How do you, I guess they got caught. Is that the thing?
Mm.
Well, pants got caught on something?
The pants got caught. He can't get them off. Mm. We can't get over the fence, so he has to ditch the pants.
He's got to not wear those ripped jeans. That's the problem with those ripped jeans. You get caught on things.
He's a bad boy for life, and I can't blame him.
Yeah, that's true.
He's the cobra of this story, let's be honest.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yes.
So they've absolutely piss-bolted, left the pants behind. The kids come home to find Atticus and a bunch of neighbours all gathered to see why the gun went off. And the kids have to act all nonchalant and be like, oh, a crowd? What's happened here? What's happening, guys?
Mm.
And Miss Maudy says that Mr. Nathan Radley, who's Boo's older brother, the one that does actually be seen around the property, shot at a black man creeping in his yard, and that he'll be waiting with his gun if the man comes back. So there's a throughout the book, there is a real undertone of racism in the book.
Dave, you didn't say anything about racism in this book. I thought this was just going to be a fun adventure with some boys knick-knocking on doors and firing a machine gun into a house. You didn't say anything about
weird tree gun.
About serious issues, but all right, if you say
I know,
so.
I'm sorry, it has a secret message all along. Gotcha, sucked in, sucked you
in. No. I'm here to laugh, not learn.
I know, I'm afraid. Two birds with one stone right here.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Two mocking stones, you might say.
Well,
that is definitely where that word should have gone. Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So they've come home and they're like, oh, what's happening here? And they're like, oh, the neighbor just shot at a man in the yard. And the kids are like, oh, well, yeah. I guess that's what happened. We certainly weren't over there. We weren't hanging around. We had nothing to do with it.
That's right.
Complicit. I see how it be.
And that's when Atticus notices that his son Jem just has no pants on in the front yard.
No pants, Jem. That's right. Now that's how you get a nickname: is you lose your pants, and then all of a sudden it's pantsless Jem forever. You know, that's how you get it. And then you have to make the choice. You have to be like, haha, yeah, pantsless Jem, and hope people forget about it. Because if you're like, no, I'm not pantsless Jem, then all of a sudden you're pantsless Jem forever. You know?
I know, that's right. Really, what you should have done is said, no, please don't call me Bicky. I hate Bicky. Then you would have got it.
That's right.
Damn.
Damn, I know.
Or I could have whipped my pants off.
That's right.
Oh, pantsless Bicky.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
So Atticus notices his son doesn't have pants on. He's like, what's going on? And Jem's a bit like, all tongue-tied. And then Dill comes in with the lie of the century and says, we were playing strip poker and I won his pants. That's why he's got no pants. What a lie.
Raises more questions than it answers, ultimately, I think. But
yeah, I think so too.
Let's see what how Atticus takes this. Let's see where he goes with this.
Well, Atticus is annoyed that they were playing cards, but seems to, because, you know, he doesn't want his kids playing cards and gambling, but he seems to accept the excuse.
All
so
right.
There you go.
Cool. Yep. Yep.
But that still leaves the problem of the pants.
Yeah.
Atticus says to Dill, all right, we'll give my son his pants back. And Dill's like, yeah, sure, I'll give his pants back. So that night, Jem has to sneak back under the cover of darkness to get his pants that are still left on the fence. He knows it's risking his life because they've already been shot at, and now the people inside the house think that there are prowlers, so they're very much ready to shoot on sight. But he tells Scout's like, don't go, but he tells her, I've got to go, I'd rather die than let Atticus find out the truth. So he goes, he gets the pants,
yep.
He doesn't get shot at, and he comes home, gets back into bed. Atticus doesn't know.
The perfect crime. That's right.
The perfect crime.
Yep.
Hey, book cheaters, just Dave here, quickly stopping the podcast to tell you something quite important, and that is, there's a world of entertainment options out there. And by that, I mean there's a lot of compelling international shows that you might be missing out on. It's time to burst the domestic TV bubble and check out Acorn TV. If you're not familiar, Acorn TV is a commercial-free streaming service that's rooted in British television. It's home to sophisticated and artful storytelling with top-rated mysteries, addicting dramas, heartfelt comedies, and so much more. Unlike other British streaming services, Acorn TV has content from Ireland, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and beyond. Lots of great stuff on there. For example, if you're a fan of quirky British comedy, then The Other One is a must-watch. It follows two sisters from very different worlds who had no idea the other existed until their father drops dead. So that's The Other One. But my tip for you is I have Acorn. Fantastic. And it just costs $5.99 a month. Absolute bargain. But what I absolutely love about it is I'm addicted to British mysteries, and there are heaps of them on there. Lots of crime shows that I've never seen before. The one I've been absolutely smashing lately is Agatha Christie's Partners in Crime, which features Jessica Raine and David Walliams, the Little Britain star, starring together in Agatha Christie's Tommy and Tuppence Mysteries. Oh man, it's set during the Cold War. It's a lot of fun. Love period stuff that's done well, you know? Great stuff. So that's my tip. Agatha Christie's Partners in Crime. So like me, if you want to escape to Britain and beyond without leaving your seat, try Acorn TV for 30 days for free. All you have to do is go to acorn.tv and then use my promo code BOOKCHEAT, all one word, BOOKCHEAT. That's acorn, acorn.tv, using the code BOOKCHEAT to get your first 30 days for free. Check it out. And this week's episode of Book Cheat is also brought to you by the good people at Audible, the leading provider of spoken word entertainment and audiobooks. They've got bestsellers, celebrity memoirs, business, news, self-development. There is something for everyone on Audible. The way it works is every month members get one credit to pick any new title plus two Audible originals from a monthly selection. And you also get access to daily news digests from the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, as well as guided meditation programs. And if you want to check out more of To Kill a Mockingbird, well, they have a fantastic version on there, narrated by the Academy Award-winning legend that is Sissy Spacek. One of the best actors reading one of the best books ever written. You honestly cannot go wrong. And finally, if you two want to get involved with Audible, all you have to do is visit audible.com/bookcheat or text bookcheat to 500-500. To become an Audible member like me, simply go to audible.com/bookcheat or text bookcheat to 500-500. And get started today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So Dil goes home and it's back to school. So a new school year. So over a year's gone past now in the entire novel so far.
Have there been any other pants incidences since then?
To be honest, there were about four or five, but I thought I'd only mention the main one.
Yeah, no, of course, you understand. Yeah. Otherwise, we'd be asking questions about all the other pants situations. Yeah.
We'll get bogged down.
And we haven't
down.
Even got into, like, shirts. Where did all the shirts go?
Yeah.
Socks,
yeah.
Like, everything, hats.
Every time Atticus is like, oh, another strip poker incident. All right. As long as you're staying indoors, I guess. Good for you, kids.
Basically, there is another message in this book, and it's an anti-gambling message. But I thought that I was already getting one good message in, so I thought that I didn't want to overload the audience.
Yeah, because otherwise we'd have to choose, wouldn't we? We'd have to be like, should we gamble or be racist?
That's right.
Which one? We got to pick one.
You've got to do one. Unfortunately, you can't do neither. You got to
do one or both. Yep, it's true.
I guess I'm installing SportsBet.
That's right. Yeah. Oh,
damn it! I didn't want to do this. But I've got to do one.
So Dil goes home and it's back to school. And then one night, Jem reveals to Scout something strange happened. When he went back to get his pants that were stuck on the fence, the rip had been fixed and they were folded neatly for him, like they were waiting for him to come back and get them.
Huh.
A little bit creepy.
Interesting.
Don't love that.
And not only that, Beck, you said his pants were fully ripped before. All the other rips have been mended as well. So he no longer has bad boy ripped pants.
Wow. So he's just a real Poindexter now, like everybody else.
He's just got regular straight cut denim.
Was he kind of upset? Was he like, those were fashion rips?
Yeah, oh, mom.
How dare they unrip them and just go like, yes, now, perfect. I don't like this. That's creepy. That's more creepy than finding pants just flowing on a fence in the breeze.
I think Boo Radley is somebody's well-meaning grandmother is who that is, ultimately.
Perhaps.
So Scout and Jem continue to find little treasure waiting for them in the knothole of the Radley place. And they know that the treasures are left for them because one day they find two figures carved out of soap that resemble Scout and Jem.
Oh, wow.
There's little figurines of them. And after a few more surprises are left for them, the siblings decide to write a thank you note to whoever is leaving them. They're polite kids, you know?
Yeah, that's right. And they might get a Werther's original out of it.
Oh,
like
yes.
Yeah.
The dream.
How much detail can you get in like a tiny wax figurine of somebody? Like, how are you, where are the details, you know?
Yeah, did they look at them and just go, yeah, that's us. I can tell.
Yeah.
You know, this
these are human children. I guess it's us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it just has their name written on it, like a text.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah.
It says, "This is you."
That's right.
Perfect. I mean, some artists are more subtle than others, but, you know, this person didn't want the message to be lost, so this is you. Or he's replaced their faces with little mirrors.
That time Time magazine was like, you're the person of the year.
Yeah. Person of the year is you. Mm. Oh. Almost as disappointing as the year the computer was the person of the year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I could have had it twice, you know, if the computer hadn't had it. I got it cleaned up. Yeah.
Hogging it. Mm-hmm. So they decide to drop a note off to say thanks to the person for giving them these little gifts. And when they go to drop the note off, they find that the knot where things had been stored for them has been filled in with concrete.
It's a bit much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost like someone doesn't want them to be doing that anymore.
This is a complete aside, but earlier in the day I was watching free-to-air television and an ad came on that was like, concrete, it's really good, and I was like talking about how good concrete was, and I was like, where's this ad going? And then at the end the title card was just like concrete, and it was an ad for concrete, and I just wanted to tell you guys, so if you guys see it, I really felt like, oh, I've actually properly lost it now. The TV is advertising concrete to me.
Who's paying Why for is that this?
The concrete council,
the concrete people. I don't know.
Big concrete.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And then, but they're so threatening anyway, like, because concrete boots, like, of course I love concrete. I would never say anything against concrete because I'm scared of it. It's
powerful. Was it followed up by, like, an ad for wood? Very useful.
I was waiting for it to come, to tell you the truth. I just didn't know. I wasn't aware that concrete, no brand, just concrete, the thing that is in most places.
Beck, have you accidentally tapped into the in-store TV of like a Bunnings or something like that? Yeah. You know, in the supermarkets.
I'm watching Doctor's Waiting Room TV for some reason. I don't know how I've done this.
You know how in the supermarket there's like Coles Radio now? They have their own radio station.
That is a digital radio station.
I know.
That you can listen to.
You can get it to
right
in your car. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I've got a digital radio. Sometimes I'll whip on some Coles Radio, enjoy just some messages about trolleys, followed by the hottest hits of the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. But yeah, concrete. I just wanted to mention concrete. Look, I know this is not that good a use for it, but it's very useful. Concrete.
Becky, you being sponsored by concrete? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, I am now. Sus.
Yeah, I am.
Wow, okay. All right.
Yeah, Squarespace and concrete. Those are my two big sponsors for the week. Concrete.
Wow.
Do you get a free trial with concrete, and if you don't like it, they'll come and rip it out?
Yeah,
you get a free bag of concrete. You gotta mix it yourself. You need one of those big mixes, though. That's not included.
You get a free pour of concrete, and if you don't like it, they come in and they dynamite it out.
That's the concrete guarantee.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a free trial of concrete. Perfect.
Well, the concrete in this story is very effective if that helps you sell your concrete, which we are obviously trying to do, Beck. It's very, yes, very effective because it fills up the hole and they can no longer get their little prezzies anymore from whoever's putting them there. They actually end up asking their neighbour, Nathan Radley, who's Boo's older brother, why it was filled in. And he said it was because the tree was dying. But then when they go and ask Atticus, does that tree look like it's dying? He's like, no. And they're like, something's weird here.
Something is weird. This is some sort of inside job. This is some sort of sibling rivalry, I think, between Boo and Nathan,
on.
Maybe.
I
yeah.
know.
Mm.
Tragedy strikes the little town when Miss Morty, the neighbour that our scout likes to hang out with, her house catches on fire in the middle of the night. Atticus and the kids go out and watch as the house burns. Basically, the whole town goes out.
Yeah, something to do.
I mean, what else is there?
Yeah, that's true.
They've already watched the concrete dry, so...
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
And it is great. Concrete, very good.
There won't be another season of Masked Singer for a couple of weeks, so, you know, they've got to find something to do, don't they?
Paradise about to wrap up.
Yep.
So the kids watch in from in front of the Radley place, and being a freezing night, because it's the middle of winter now, Scout is very cold. Someone drapes a blanket over her, which she doesn't really take notice of. And then later when Atticus asks who gave it to her, Jem realises that it must have been Boo Radley.
Boo. You know, yes. if I was in that town and, you know, giving out nicknames, I'd probably call him Yay Radley because of how nice they were. Good. Celebrate all the nice things, you know?
Well, despite the nice move, Scout nearly vomits at the thought of Boo being so close to her without knowing. She's absolutely terrified.
I mean, that makes sense. I don't really want anyone to give me a blanket in the night. That's fine. I'll just be cold. Everyone
just be cold rather than a strange blanket in the night. Well, the incident chills Scout and Jem to the core.
Good thing she had that blanket then.
Yes.
That is handy.
How ironic.
It's a horrible cycle. They keep getting a blanket. They get scarier. They get more chilled to the core. It's awful. Jem gets so upset that he confesses everything to his father. He tells him about the knot hole filled with gifts and the mended pants that were waiting for him and the fact that he was the one being shot at. And Atticus is like, okay, just keep quiet about it. Just don't worry. Just keep quiet. So Miss Morty's house burns down. And despite that, the next day, she's quite cheerful about it because she says, I wanted to downsize anyway, which is slightly suspicious.
But no one wants to downsize to the point they don't have a thing anymore. That's not downsizing. Yeah. That's just getting rid of a thing.
I wanted to downsize to the doghouse. That's what the only surviving part of this building. Yeah, that's what I wanted to do.
So she's not upset at all about her house burning down. The only thing she seems to be upset about is not seeing Boo Radley drape the blanket over Scout. But that's it. Closer to Christmas, Scout nearly gets into a fight with one of her classmates, Cecil Jacobs, after Jacobs teases her father Atticus for defending a black man in court. And this is important and becomes the crux of the story, particularly in part two. Atticus has been asked to defend Tom Robinson, who is a black man who's been accused of raping a white woman. So, Cecil,
you've left a space here for us to put in a fun joke, Dave. But we're not taking the bait. We're going to take the bait. We're going to say this is a serious issue. We're not going to make light of it.
But also making fun, like this classmate making fun of this thing. It's like, yeah, this is ripe for comedy.
Because of the racism in the town, Cecil, who is a white boy, is just making fun of Scout because her father is defending a black man. That's essentially what he's teasing her about. And Scout, who's very defensive of her family, nearly gets into another fight with him. That night, Atticus tells her, you got to, quote, hold your head high and keep those fists down, end quote. And she promises to do no more fighting. But she soon breaks the promise when, at Christmas, back on the family farm, Finch's Landing, that I mentioned at the start of the book, one of Scout's cousins, a boy named Francis, starts teasing her about her father, again, defending Tom Robinson.
These boys, don't like them.
Scout has had enough. She ends up getting into a fight with Francis. Her uncle, Uncle Jack, spanks Scout without hearing her side of the story. Basically comes in, she's beating up her cousin. He's like, what are you doing? Punishes her. But later that night, she tells Jack what Cousin Francis had been saying about Atticus, and it was some pretty awful stuff, I've got to say. Jack gets furious, but Scout swears him to secrecy and begs him not to tell Atticus, as she wasn't supposed to get in any more fights. That night, Scout overhears her father discussing the trial with Uncle Jack, and this is when we first learn that the Yules are the ones that have accused Tom Robinson.
The Yules are the bug people.
That's right, they're the bug family from earlier in the story.
Also, is that Christmas? That's also Christmassy, Yules.
It's true.
Is this a Christmas story? No.
Secretly, it is a Christmas.
And we all have a bowl of bugs on the Christmas table at Christmas lunch as well. So I mean, it all ties together, doesn't it?
Australian tradition.
Just have Christmas a side beetles. Of bugs. Yeah, that's right.
Christmas beetles. That's what they're for. You go chomp chomp, crunchy crunch,
crunchy crunch. Yes.
So Scout is secretly listening to Atticus confessing to Uncle Jack that the case is absolutely stuffed. He says, the evidence boils down to you did, I didn't. The jury couldn't possibly be expected to take Tom Robinson's word against the Yules. Inferring there that, of course, that they're the jury, who will be all white people, will side with the white person. Jack asks Atticus why he can't just pass the case. If it's impossible, just don't take it on. And Atticus says, quote, and this is a a longer one, but I'll read it here. Do you think I could face my children otherwise?
Mm.
You know what's going to happen as well as I do, Jack. And I hope and I pray that I can get Gem and Scout through it without bitterness and most of all without catching Maycomb's usual disease. I just hope that Gem and Scout come to me for their answers instead of listening to the town. I hope they trust me enough.
Mm.
End quote. And then he says, Jean-Louise, go to bed. And the narrator, who had been listening the whole time, that's when she writes, I never figured out how Atticus knew I was listening. It was not until many years later that I realized he wanted me to hear every word he said. So he was doing a bit of strategic listening there.
I never understood how he knew that I was listening, but many years later I realized it was because I was in the middle of the room. Just standing in the open, and he could see me with his eyes.
Yeah.
So
I just had my mouth open.
Yeah.
I was just standing there scratching my butt.
I had one of those big hearing aid horns sticking in my ear, just leaning towards him.
One of those hats with the little propeller, and I was spinning it. Yes. Spinning the hat.
Yeah.
And I was like, how did he spot me? How did he spot me? I let off a confetti cannon. I let off a whole confetti cannon and went, poof. And then I'm like, how do you see me? I don't understand.
Mm.
Oh, well, but many years later, yep. I realized.
I got it. Dad was pretty wise in his own way.
I understand. Yeah. He's got eyes and he saw me with him.
Atticus is seen as old and a bit embarrassing to his kids. He's older than the other dads. He's described as feeble. He was nearly 50.
Oh, a bit of a daggy dad, you know?
Yeah.
Wearing one of those bucket hats. You know? Yeah.
Oh.
Repping like a North Face jacket?
Yeah, a bit of a North Face jacket. Yeah.
Is that what he's got? Or a Kathmandu?
Might have a Kathmandu. It's true.
Might have a Kathmandu. Kathmandu?
Kathmandu. Probably wearing some Crocs. Probably wearing some Crocs because they're just so comfortable.
Yes. You know? They're very comfortable.
Dad,
thigh high socks.
Yeah.
He's got the
socks
up.
Socks and Crocs. Yeah, yeah.
Hell yeah.
What we would describe as a cool dude, they think, is a little bit embarrassing.
Right. Yeah, I mean, how times have changed, you know?
No.
Yeah.
It's funny how...
It's all shifted.
Yeah.
It's all in cycles.
You just described Post Malone, I think.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
Yeah, I've just realised.
Yeah.
Is that what he looks like? I get it now. I'm picturing him better now. He's got the face tattoos as well?
He's got barbed wire underneath each eye. God, he looks so uncool.
So uncool.
But their perception of their dad somewhat changes when a rabid dog comes into town. And during a time when rabies was a death sentence, this was taken very seriously and everyone hides in their houses and they're not sure what to do.
But I like that the dog has come to town. They've got word. They're like, here he comes. Well, he's on a sketch.
They're all in their houses and someone yells, dog, and they just look up the street. Just for ages, it's like a dog slowly walking towards them.
Yeah.
Amazing.
The mayor of the town has got a telegram like there's a rabid dog coming, batten down the hatches.
Do you know what, we joke, but whenever there's a dog in an office, when there was, you'd always know about it.
Yeah, that's
true.
There
would be word. It's like dog. There's a dog. And you'd all go see it. So actually, I kind of get it now.
Yeah.
What about when you're in
school?
If there
was suddenly a dog. Yes, dog in the playground.
Dog in the playground
is the best.
Everyone would lose their mind.
Where did it come from?
The only thing people would lose their mind more is if there was a fight. And if there was a fight with a dog, oh my God.
And if the dog was rabid and was running rampant in a town, wow.
It caused the fight. Amazing.
That's crazy.
That's right. Yes.
Yes.
Mm.
So everyone's hiding from this rabid dog and everyone is, you know, unsure what to do. Atticus reluctantly steps up and he shoots the dog from a long distance and kills it instantly with one hell of a shot.
Wow.
And the kids.
Daggy Dad's got some hidden depths.
Yeah, that's right. Daggy Dad's like a sniper.
I was picturing a Pomeranian, so now I'm really he's just going poof. And it's just puff. So now, oh my God.
I'm picturing he just did it at brunch. He was just sitting at the table and he sees the dog out of the corner of his eye and he just sort of puts the gun behind his head and just fires one shot. He's not even looking.
Perfect.
Yeah,
over the shoulder. Well, the kids are already impressed. They're like, what the hell, Dad? And then Miss Morty tells them later that as a young man, Atticus was the best shot in the county, known as One Shot Finch.
Oh, hello. Sick. Wow. Ah, ladies, form an orderly queue for One Shot Finch.
I know.
Do you get one shot at him? Yeah. Everyone gets a go. Yeah. One shot for each. Bam.
Hey, I'm looking forward to my go.
That's what they call relationships. You get a go.
Yeah, you get a go.
You
hey,
get a go.
Babe, give us a go. Give us a go.
Come on.
So I'm one shot
in. So I said give us a go and we've been married for 50 years. Yeah.
Well, the kids are pretty impressed. They're like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Dad's got this, yeah, this crazy past. Mm. Scout says to her brother, Jem, boy, do we've got something to tell the people at school on Monday. Atticus is a great shot. We finally got something to be proud about. And Jem tells her to keep it to herself. He says, I reckon if he wanted us to know, he'd have told us. If he was proud of it, he'd have told us. So let's not tell anyone.
Mm.
So there you go.
Do
you
think, will this come up later?
I was going to say, do you think it'll come up later? Yeah. Like it, like he'll be losing the case later, and then he'll be like, okay, but how about this? If I beat opposing counsel at like a shooting competition, you know, will you let my client go? And they're like, well, yes. where are those? As if you'd win. All right, I'll take that bet. Pew 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 pew. You know,
or will he win the case? And as he's leaving to celebrate,
yeah,
that dead dog's son comes in and assassinates him.
Yeah, that's revenge. True. Yeah.
Mm. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, the final chapter of part one
yes.
features some more friendly neighbourhood racism.
Okay, great.
One of the town's residents, Mrs. Dubose, who Atticus tells Jem to be a gentleman to her because she's old and sick. But Mrs. Dubose does not return the favour of kindness and yells at the kids about their father working with black people, both his cook and now he's defending someone, and also says some absolutely horrible stuff. This time it's Jem's turn to lose his temper and he smashes all of Mrs. Dubose's camellia bushes, smashes all the flowers.
Why, I never. That's a step too far, Jem, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you know what? I think it's fine. So there we go. Now we're in a opposition and that might be funny. I'm not sure. I forgot what funny was in that moment. I was like, what's funny again? Is this funny if we just disagree? Oh, no.
Yeah, that's fun. That's funny. I think it's funny. Now, yeah, we're having a good time. Yeah.
Oh, no. Okay, we're good?
Yeah, it's good.
But also, yeah, smash those flowers.
Smashes them with a bat. Atticus hears what happened and he makes Jem apologize to Mrs. Dubose, despite the fact that Dubose was absolutely critical of Atticus himself, and he lets Mrs. Dubose decide his punishment, and Jem is sentenced to read to Mrs. Dubose after school for 1 month. The ultimate punishment.
You just know she'd be reading like Bryce Courtney or something boring where you got to it's really long, or like a book about war,
or like John Law's poetry book or something like that. Yeah. You know, just
or like romance novels, like some
maybe
novels,
yeah.
Got some really, really sexy stuff.
Yeah, really sexy. Or like, what's that one? What's the one with the Da Vinci Code? The Da Vinci Code.
That's the one.
What's the book I'm trying to think of that I said?
It's called The One with the Da Vinci Code.
Right, okay. Oh, it's good I said it right then. Great.
It's called Hey Everyone, We Found the Da Vinci Code. Yeah.
Beck, was that you trying to name the sexiest book you could think of?
Yeah, that's me. I'm like, do you know what's really hot? Tom Hanks and going to a church.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And Cats of Nine Tails.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, that could actually be hot. I was trying to name things that weren't hot. That could be hot in certain circles. Not a yucky yum. Not hot for me. I like Doritos and concrete, as previously attested to in the podcast.
That's some hot stuff.
You've tied it all together, Beck. It's like an episode of Seinfeld here. You've just...
neat little bow. Yeah. I'm dipping Doritos in concrete, having the time of my life. That's sexy to me. Continue, please, Dave. Help.
So, Jem's punishment is to read these sexy, sexy stories to Mrs. Dubose. A scout goes along for the long, boring sessions, and they just get longer and more boring, and it's just awful. But soon after the punishment, the month goes past, Mrs. Dubose dies. And when she dies, Atticus reveals to his kids that she was battling an addiction to morphine.
Oh.
That's right. And the reading really helped her. It was one of her ways to sort of keep her mind off things. Oh. And when she died, she left Jem a little box. He opened it and found a single white camellia, the same flower that he'd destroyed. And Jem's like, God, can't she just leave me alone? And Atticus explains, she had her own views about things, a lot different from mine, maybe. Son, I told you that if you hadn't lost your head, I'd have made you go read to her. I wanted you to see something about her. I wanted you to see what real courage is, instead of getting the idea that courage is a man with a gun in his hand. Sort of a life lesson. And then the final line of part one is, Jem picked up the candy box, that's the box that the flower had been in, and threw it in the fire. He picked up the camellia, and when I went off to bed, I saw him fingering the wide petals. Atticus was reading the paper. And that, girls and boys, is the end of part one.
You've done it. You've done it, Harper Lee. And Dave, also, you've done it also as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Harper Lee.
Very intriguing. Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
So I guess we should just do a little recap to sum up what's happened there.
Okay.
So we've got Scout and Jem. Scout's telling us the story. And remember, it's all going to lead up to why he broke his arm all these years ago.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yes.
That's right. And then they've got their neighbour, Dill, who comes over the summers and they're obsessed with Boo Radley, the mysterious man from next door. So that's one sort of plot. And the other plot really is their father, Atticus, and now he's defending this man in what he sees is a trial that he can't possibly win.
And also George has told a woman that he's a marine biologist. And it's like, you know, it's why just be yourself, George, you know? How's he going to get away with this? She's gonna figure it out.
Oh, wow. The seas were angry that day, my friend.
Yeah, that's right. That's a lot of plot. That's kind of I wonder if they're going to tie them together. I don't know. I wonder if the breaking of the arm will be an anticlimax at the end. You know, I don't know, but I mean, I guess there's a reason this is a classic though. So we'll find out. Will we not?
We will find out on the next installment. That's right, because we are going to make this a two-part episode because it is so commonly requested. I thought that I should try and do the story a bit of justice, and rather than rush through it too much, if we could take it over two parts, because the book itself is written in two parts. Beck, how are you feeling about it so far?
No mockingbirds, I notice, which, you know, I like birds. There's more racism than mockingbirds. I don't love that that much. But, you know.
The title comes from a line. Atticus says, shoot all the blue jays you want if you can hit them. But remember, it's a sin to kill a mockingbird. So that was a line from the first half.
Why are we shooting blue jays? Why are we just gunning down blue jays? Also, why don't we just leave them alone? I like birds.
Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. That's okay. You're forgiven, Warnicky.
It's like that TLC song, you know? Don't go shooting mockingbirds. Please stick to the Blue Jays. Something, something, the rest of the song, you know? You guys get it. Yeah.
I
get it.
I didn't put that together before, but it's amazing how influential this work has been.
I know. They wrote this whole book after the song, so that's wild, you know?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, at the end of part one, I guess you've only heard half the story so far, but I usually get the guests to score it out of five. So I guess that maybe I'll get you to score it out of five now, and at the end of part two, see if it lives up to the expectation or maybe improves on what you've heard. So, Beck, what do you think you would give that out of five?
So far, I think I'm giving it like a solid 3.5. Like, it seems like an intriguing start.
3.5.
I would continue reading it and see what happened to these people. I wish there were less nicknames, but, you know, that's why that's the 0.5. Just call each other by each other's names. You got good names. Use them.
Yeah.
Otherwise, And I feel like I also should give it that, because now it's probably going to do something and become like a really influential, amazing book, and I don't want to then go back to this part and then go, oh, I gave it a one. This seems like a silly story. This is like an Enid Blyton book. I don't understand. Anyway.
I mean, it's always great when I have people on here and they give Shakespeare a one. It's so nah, not for me.
It's not great. It doesn't seem good.
I'm gonna give it a 3.5 as well. But more, you know what? More for what I've learned about the book, I think, because all I know about To Kill a Mockingbird is just some stills from the movie, which to my knowledge had just been some sort of courtroom drama. That's all I knew about it. It was someone. I'm going to say Jimmy Stewart in the role. I don't know.
I think it's Gregory Peck.
Gregory
right?
Peck. It's Gregory Peck. He's wearing a nice suit and he's doing some courtroom magic. But I didn't know anything about the remainder of the book. So it's good to finally.
Oh, that's cool. Well, that's him as Atticus, and we're going to go to trial in part two. Can I just say?
Well, it's good. Well, it's good to know, because in the past, if anybody had said to me, "What do you think about the novel To Kill a Mockingbird?" I would have said, man, it's just courtroom action from start to finish, and I would have absolutely embarrassed myself. So it's good to know. So what is good is here is that I'll have this knowledge for probably 2 to 3 weeks at the forefront of my mind. And so if during this lockdown anyone else asks me about To Kill a Mockingbird, I'll have that knowledge to wow them, and then a few weeks after that, it'll all be gone. And
in like 2 weeks, I'll just casually bring it up. I'll
thank
like,
you.
Hey, what about To Kill a Mockingbird? Just so we can use it.
Yeah, nice.
All right. Nice. I'll give you a buzz. And
yeah, thank
like,
you.
We'll both pretend we weren't part of this podcast.
Okay.
It'll be a genuine moment like that one that we had in the middle.
Nice. Beck, what podcast? Wink.
Wink.
Yeah. Nice.
Can you hear these winks? They're very big winks.
Yeah.
That's very nice, guys. But if you can still share this on your social medias, that would be very much appreciated.
What social medias?
No,
yeah. Wink.
Who am I? Where am I? By concrete. What have I become?
Well, that does bring us to the end of the episode. We'll be back, hopefully, with part two.
Well, yeah, hopefully. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't want to make any promises, just in case. You know, you never know. You never know.
What, do you think the government's going to ban Zoom meetings? You think that's what's going to happen?
I think they might.
Well,
imagine if they did. It'd be a lot less awkward, weird. You're on mute. What if they could ban? No, actually, I like those moments. I think that's nice.
Part of the experience.
Yeah.
But before we go, Meso, your fantastic podcast, The Weekly Planet.
Oh, yeah. It's about movies and comic books and TV shows. And maybe soon we'll have a special episode on all the things I know about the book To Kill a Mockingbird. I'll just do a special on it, you know? I mean, you know, I've got half the episode in the bag already. Just, you know, I've just put my thoughts together on my notes and stuff like that. So maybe we'll do a special episode. So, yeah, it's going to be great. I mean, you know, content permitting, obviously.
Content permitting.
Yeah, that's out every week. I mean, you know, it's pretty good. I have a good fun time with it. So,
it is a lot of fun. You guys have a great time. And Beck, your podcast, is it still on hiatus? Are you coming back with the Kentucky Fried Chatting?
Yeah. Do you know what? We've got a lot of it recorded. We've got a new podcast called Food Fight, which is a follow-up to Kentucky Fried Chatting, where we verse foods off against each other. And we recorded a bunch before we went into, like, anything. This was before any restrictions. So there is video footage of me, Xavier, and Pete sitting in a podcast studio. And I just wonder if I put that out ever, people will just be like, oh, what are you eating together? Yeah, I don't know. We might hold it for a little
what
bit.
What you're going to need to do is, based on every experience I've ever had on YouTube, is that you're going to need to like have a flashing warning sign and an air horn that's constantly saying like we recorded this before lockdown, but then even then most of the comments below it are going to be like, did you guys record this in lockdown? this is very unsafe.
That's the thing. Such a weird thing. I'm like, it's sitting there, but I don't know about that. But you can watch a lot of Gamey Game at the moment. We've got like almost 100 episodes of Gamey Game just sitting there ready for you to slurp up.
Slurp it up.
They're all there for you to suck on a few episodes of Gamey Game.
But we just, the last one we did was The Last of Us Part 2, and it was, we were in a room together and we had Mark Bonanno on, and he was off in like a zone over in the corner. It's a lot of fun. Have a watch of that if you want to watch some people in a room and remember what that was like. Because I'll be watching it after this. Remember people in a room? but it's, Gamey Game is really great. It's on YouTube. You can find it. I think gameygameyshow.com has them all. If you go look there.
Yeah, nice.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, I'll make it easy and I'll link to all the stuff that we've just mentioned there in the description of this episode. So, Beck, Nick Mason, thank you so much for joining me on To Kill a Mockingbird Part 1. But until next time, I'll say thank you and...
Books forever! Yay!
Hey, book cheaters. Just Dave here dropping in at the end of the episode to thank you very much for listening to it in the first place. Sorry, I'm laughing here because as soon as I hit record, my dog Humphrey shot up. He was sleeping soundly and now he's coming over to pester me. Pup, here you go. Take that. Humphrey, you're a fantastic co-host, the best guest I've ever had. He's having a great time in the background. Yeah, I'm here dropping in to say thanks for listening to this episode in the first place. Thanks to Nick and Beck for being on the show. What an absolute pleasure it was to have both of them back. And hopefully they'll be joining me next week for part two of To Kill a Mockingbird, which I forgot to say has been suggested by a lot of people. Now, the way this works is I usually do books that have been suggested by listeners, and there's a little link in the description of this episode that you can click. And it will take you to a place where you can submit your name and the name of the book you want me to do. And then usually I thank people at the top of the episode, but that completely slipped my mind. And To Kill a Mockingbird is a very popular one. It's going to take a while here. I've got over 30 names of people to get through. So if you've been standing by for that, maybe your name's about to be read out. These are the people that suggested that I do To Kill a Mockingbird. We've got Tate Evans, McKenna Middlebrook, Alex Ryland Jones, Jared Cordner, Amos Fry, Christian Fu, Joey Stenquist, Reese Brown, in fact, Kate Bell, Gabe Thomas, David Taylor, David, I'm not sure where you're from, just a David, Regina Siskiewicz, had a real crack, Regina, Jordan Reese, Stephanie from Montefideo, man, that's cool, Alice Middleton, Ryan MacIsaac, Caleb from Northern Ireland, Maribel from England, Tegan Longman, Quentin Chalair, I think I copied and pasted that, so that is your name, not Charlie, Chalair, Eva Schneider, Scott Blind, Danny McMeans, sorry Danny, not laughing at you, again, the dog is now trying to wrestle the microphone, Caitlin from Ohio, Grace from New York, Talia Morgan, Catherine Schuler, Rebecca Spellman, Jason from California, and last but not least, Stephanie Arnott. Thank you so much for all of you suggesting that I tackle To Kill a Mockingbird. All right, the dog's on me now. I think I might have to pause this. Okay, I'm back. Who knows how long Humphrey will give me here. Thanks to everyone that suggested I do To Kill a Mockingbird. This show, I've also got to say, is supported by people on Patreon. You go to patreon.com/dogoonpod. And you can support this show as well as Do Go On, which this is a spin-off of, where we talk about things from history. This week, I did a report to my co-hosts Matt and Jess for our 250th episode. So if you haven't heard that show, 250 of them for you to check out. It was all about the Mad Trapper of Rat River. A fantastic outlaw / survival story from Canada. What a wild ride. I see you be supporting Do Go On as well as Primates, Listen Now, Phrasing the Bar, which is our Patreon-only podcast, and of course, Book Cheat. And as a way to thank people for supporting the show on Patreon, Humphrey's back, I like to I read out people's names and I also get them to submit their favourite book to me and I read out those as well. So I've got 6 people to thank now and 6 different books. So thanks a million to Chris Curtis. It was written in to say, my favourite books are the Discworld series by Sir Terry Pratchett. This is in Chris's words here. No one has ever been able to grasp the core of what it means to be human, just like him, in my opinion. And his personal philosophy about life, death, and religion is very inspiring. This is a quote. I'd rather be a rising ape than a falling angel. is probably one of his best quotes, Chris says. Also, Good Omens, co-authored with Neil Gaiman, is probably one of the best books I've ever read. Thanks, Chris. I got to tell you, Terry Pratchett frequently comes up in this section at the end of the show. People love him. He's got to be good. So thanks so much. Next up, we've got Anshika. Anshika's written in to say, my favourite book series is The Realm of the Elderlings, for its amazing characters and arcs. And also, Jane Eyre. I love the way it's written, as well as the interesting take it has on a woman's life for the time it was written. She's written, love you guys. Thanks so much, Anshika. Appreciate that. I would also love to thank the support of Connor Simmer. Connor Simmer, who's written, well, I can't really say that I have a favourite book. I grew up loving the Redwall books by Brian Jacques, and lately, I've been slowly going through the Icelandic family sagas. Thanks, Connor. There's a book series that I also liked when I was young. I haven't thought about Brian Jacques in ages. Nice one. Thanks so much. Jenna Schaefer has said, my favourite book is Six of Crows by Leigh Bardugo. But in brackets here is, close second is the sequel, Crooked Kingdom. Jenna goes on, Leigh created an incredibly realistic fantasy world, but these have the added bonus of being awesome heist books. Oh man, I love a heist. Nice, that sounds really cool, right up my alley. Thanks so much, Jenna. Thomas Doppelreiter has written in, who is our Patreon supporter from Austria, who is a bit of a quiz master. And every week on our Patreon-only group, which you can also get access to if you support the show on Patreon, he posts a quiz, which is usually 9 questions. And then the 10th question is, what is the connection between the previous 9 questions? On one of our bonus episodes for Patreon-only, we did one of his quizzes recently. Thomas, love your stuff. And this is what the quiz master's books are. Thomas writes, I'm kind of a collector. I own around 800 books, and many of them are kind of favourites. One of the not-so-obvious ones is The Colorado Kid by Stephen King, which is not so much a horror story than a mystery. 2 old reporters tell a story to a young one about a strange case they looked in 1980. It just gets weirder and weirder. Thomas writes, my favourite book series is the Discworld series by Terry Pratchett. I'm just rereading the entire series, 41 books, this time in English, as a yearly reading challenge. Yearly? Thomas, that's amazing. I told you, Pratchett keeps coming up, and there he is again. Nice one, thanks so much. And finally, Lewis Angel. I'd rather be a Lewis Angel than an ape on the way up, am I right? Does that mean anything? Lewis, thank you so much for your support. Favourite book is probably Yuval Noah Harari. I know that writer, but doesn't say which one. Maybe Sapiens. I think that's a very big seller of his. Lewis writes, I wanted to pick a fiction, but this book is just such a perfectly written overview of such intense topics that somehow manages to still be a page-turner. Is it Sapiens? We'll never know unless you let me know, Aunt Lewis, and then we will know, you and I. But I'll never share it. No, I can. And honourable mention from Lewis, he says, To Pilgrim by Terry Hayes. There you go. So if you're looking for a book to check out, you can always do To Kill a Mockingbird or one of the books that I just read out from our fantastic supporters. And if you want to join their ranks, and it truly is appreciated so much if you can afford to do so at the moment, you go to patreon.com/dogoonpod. Yeah. But I guess that does bring us to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for listening, one and all. I'll be back next week with another episode. Usually it's a mystery what I'm going to do, but you know, I'm going to do part 2 of To Kill a Mockingbird. So until then, thank you so much, and as always, books forever!
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.